Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Gail Hoekstra, who is the executive director of the Drop-In Center Downtown, which has been a home for those without one for more than 30 years in Guelph. To say that these have been difficult times for the Drop-In Center and those that use it would be something of an understatement even in COVID-19 adjusted terms. But there was recently a ray of hope when news came out that the Drop-In Center was looking to purchase the Parkview Motel on Woolwich Street and convert it into supportive housing. As we continue to recover from this first phase of the pandemic and look ahead to that potential second wave in the fall, the need to give everyone a place to live with the health and social supports they may need has become all the more important. Launching supportive housing in Guelph is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. At the August 24th City Council meeting, $800,000 in support from the Affordable Housing Reserve was given to the St. Joseph's Housing Corporation to help complete a project to provide 65 affordable units to area seniors. Gail Hoekstra was one of the delegates that spoke out in favor of the investment, but she made some news of her own when she said that her organization was working on a deal to buy the Parkview Motel at the corner of Woolwich Street and Maryland Drive and turn that establishment into supportive housing. The Ontario Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing describes supportive housing as a, quote, combination of housing assistance and supports that enables people to live as independently as possible in their community, unquote. That support can come in the form of counseling, personal support, case management, income support, and assistance with applying for social assistance, assistance with medication, and life skills training. The development of supportive housing has been a major piece of developing housing policy in the social services sector lately, and Mayor Cam Guthrie even reconvened his task force on homelessness to talk specifically about the creation of supportive housing in Guelph before the pandemic hit. The progress on creating more housing like this in Guelph seems to have stalled, though, because of the pandemic. It's important to note that supportive housing is housing, and not shelter. The immediate aftermath of Hoekstra sharing her news about the project, a project that has been in the works for nearly a year now, as you will learn, was that they came with the usual NIMBY concerns and an extremely stereotypical and hurtful point of view about the people that this project might help, which otherizes them. Bad things are born in an information vacuum, and before a narrative about this project gets too solidified in a package that people have pre-made for it, we're going to lay out the facts on this Parkview Supportive Housing project on this week's podcast. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, Gail Hoekstra will take us through the timeline. How did this project come about? How far along are they in the process? And what resources have they brought to bear in getting it this far? We will also talk about what Parkview Motel might look like, what resources the Drop-In Center will need to complete the project, and why social services are moving away from emergency sheltered systems to more supportive housing models. And finally, we will discuss the outreach to the neighborhood, what Hoekstra hopes to achieve with the town hall this week about the project, and overcoming politics to create more supportive housing in Guelph and help our homeless population. So I caught up with Gail Hoekstra earlier this week via Zoom. So Gail Hoekstra, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Maybe to begin, for people who have heard the name and maybe a bit of the history with, you know, Sister Christina and how the Drop-In Center got started, perhaps you could just lay out, you know, what the work of the Drop-In Center, what happens there on a daily basis. And I realize that's changed to an extent given COVID-19, but, you know, under quote-unquote normal circumstances, what does a day in the life of the Drop-In Center look like?
Okay. So yes, I'm the director here at the Drop-In Center, and it was started in 1983 by Sister Christine, who I worked with kind of over the years and still see, which is nice. But the purpose was she wanted to create a space downtown that was welcoming and a place to share food and friendship was the original mission. And so that has grown over the years. Initially, it was for people that might live on a low income. In 1986, they started the homeless shelter because homelessness was becoming a more pressing issue. So that opened up. And then over time, we have grown the drop-in center. I joined as the director. I always worked, I'm a social worker, so I worked in mental health for years and worked here in that capacity. But 8 years ago, they invited me to become the executive director. And because of my background in mental health, we were able to develop relationships for the people that come through the doors of the drop-in center and our homeless shelters. We've been able to develop the partnerships with health agencies like CMHA, the health center, Stonehenge, and programs like that to help the people that come through here. So more recently over time, so we were pre-COVID open 7 days a week. We had people coming to have a meal. We had meals twice a day. We never were closed one day of the entire year for all those years. And recently, I think the pressures pre-COVID even were on the homelessness issue has becoming, has being a bigger pressure point for our community. So we were open 24 hours a day pre-COVID to help with a place to be during the colder months. And then once COVID hit, we had to close the doors of the drop-in center for the people living on a limited income and then switch our efforts to opening or partnering with the county. They are the funder for homelessness in opening hotels for people that are homeless. So now we have between 80 and 90 individuals that are homeless in the hotels that could still consider a shelter, and we're waiting about funding, but we're making sure to take care of those individuals. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing.
It's complicated.
I know.
Of course, one of those hotels, and I think this is getting sort of more known and getting into the reason why we're talking here today, is the Parkview Motel. And that is one of the places where that you have been hosting people who don't have a place to live through this crisis.
That's right. We've used the Parkview Motel since the shelter system opened as an overflow motel. So that was since 1986. And in recent months, when I was, when you work in this field for a long time and the pressures of homelessness just get greater and greater, and people are homeless for longer periods of time, and they're struggling with issues around mental health, addiction, medical health, it's really hard. You don't want, the supports are funding the experience of homelessness, but not necessarily the outcome or the solutions to homelessness. So I think once COVID hit, we just said we need to focus on solutions, because it's really hard to see the same people year in, year out that continue to be homeless without the support that they need. So I talked to the Parkview owners over Christmas, and just they were in dropping off gifts, and I said, hey, would you sell us the Parkview? And they said, yes, we would. So it kind of happened in a natural way. So we just started talking. We started talking then about what that might look like. I went to the board. And so we've been sort of chasing this idea since. And our goal is to make something happen before winter. And especially since the COVID-19 crisis hit, there's even just that increased pressure point. We wanted this to happen pre-COVID, but now it's just it's propelling this idea even stronger.
Well, that's interesting, because I don't think that's a detail I had heard yet, is that this is something that was kind of in the works before COVID. Back in December, when we were not even remotely concerned about it coming to Canada or really expanding anywhere beyond Wuhan.
That's right.
Before we get into sort of those details, could you describe what exactly supportive housing is?
Supportive housing, it is the ideal for the population that we see that have been homeless for years and struggle with complex issues. There are many people. Last year, 700 and I think 64 unique individuals came through homeless through our shelter system. But many of those might be going through a situational crisis that they find housing at the end of a month's time of providing shelter. But there, right now we have about 150 people in Guelph that have been homeless for years and have this complex, have complex issues that they're dealing with. And we know that to put them just in an apartment and give them a place doesn't necessarily lead to success for those individuals. So permanent supportive housing is, for example, having a place like the Parkview. Every person would have their own individual unit, but then you would have supports 24/7. And they would be supports from people that are shelter workers and housing stability workers to nurses, social workers, medical, mental health workers, all the different workers, people that really understand addiction and mental health and those things happening together and how to support in the best way. So it's a very healthy, supportive living situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So would that mean additional, like, would that mean for the drop-in center, sort of the administrator of this, that would that mean like hiring additional people? That would mean, you know, having people on site 24 hours a day to meet all those various needs you were talking about?
Yes. So at this point, because we're using hotels and we have some of our hotels are staffed in a 24/7 way, we are talking to our health partners and figuring out how to redeploy some of their health services to be entrenched in the hotel as it is now, which we would want to use. It's almost like a pilot that we would want to switch over to the Parkview. Mm. So yes, we're working really hard together to figure out how to fund and support a project like this. Because mm-hmm. it needs to actually be the start of many more. We need to solve homelessness for 150 people. So right. this is just a start to, you have to start somewhere, start small. It's a good size. That's why I like the idea of the Parkview. It's from a ideal best practice perspective and all the research around 30, 35 is a good group. You don't want it to get too big. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a good layout. It's a good place. We would open the front into a big community kitchen where people could come and meet workers, but also share meals together and build that community space there as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to go over the timeline a bit to sort of how get a handle on how we got here. So last Christmas, you have a casual conversation with the owners of the motel and kind of bring up this possibility that, you know, you were looking at outright buying the Parkview for this intention. Were you surprised by their eagerness to jump on, or, you know, I guess how much of this was just kind of like a lark on your part and just something you would casually bring up as something that's sort of been in the back of your head all this time?
Well, Sister Christine, as soon as I started here 8 years ago, we've been talking about this idea. We've looked at different places. We've actually talked to the Parkview previously. This is something we knew and we do know as a community needs to happen. So this isn't a whim by any stretch. Mm. So I've talked to many people. I have really chased down many ideas. And then I was actually having breakfast with Sister Christine in Toronto and said, I think I'm going to just ask the Parkview again. And then interestingly, how life happens, the next day, the owner walked in. So I just threw it by them. I don't know if they were eager. They said, we'll take it into consideration. And they met with their family. What would that look like? We have had a longstanding kind of relationship with them. We had some conversations and it went from there. So it certainly wasn't a whim. Mm. A long story behind it and a lot of conversation, but that's where we are today.
I'm sure Sister Christina maybe took it as a sign how quickly this came about. So that's last December. I gather there has been some organization on your part and on the drop-in centers. I mean, granted, everyone's thrown for this loop in mid-March. and having to scramble and find alternatives and that kind of thing. But I gathered from your presentation at the council meeting on August 24th, you have been doing some work on this plan since then?
Yes, so for the park deal, we did get CMHC funding, which is federal funding, to explore how to make this idea come to life. And so we have put a lot of work into that proposal. What would it look like operationally? What would we want to invest to beautify it? We would want to make it a beautiful place for people to live and safe and all those things that you want to consider with a project like this. And we did that in preparation for an affordable housing pot of dollars that the County of Wellington was putting in a request for proposals around. We put our proposal in and we did lose to the St. Joseph's project. So we did do a bit of that work, so we know what we need, but we just didn't want to give up on that project, regardless of that we didn't get that particular pot of money. Then that led me to go to the delegation at the city council to say, we need to create solutions around this issue, and I just wanted to make this project known.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So the CMHC money, you have confirmation that that is available to you?
Yes, we have it, right. We have it available to us right now.
Okay. Yeah. Is that conditional in any way on what you might get or what you can get from the local funders? Like, are you kind of stuck in that kind of like area that, you know, if, and because I, you know, covering these kind of announcements for years, you know, yeah, some grants from upper levels of government come and, you know, $8 million from the province, let's say, but that then you need $16 million from the city to make this project a reality. Is this something similar to what's happening with your project?
The seed dollars is just a small pot where you explore the idea and you just understand what all the next steps need to be. It does show sort of a federal support of a project like this, because they do look at it and consider whether they, and often, which is exciting about the Parkview, often you don't get seed dollars unless you actually own a property and you're much further along. And they actually let us have these dollars because I know from the federal perspective around homelessness and permanent supportive housing, they're really interested in motel conversion projects. Mm. So yes, the seed dollar sort of gives you you just know that the federal government is interested, but we all know that co-investment is the way to go. So the all levels of government have to pitch in for it to be successful, because often the federal government says that the local municipal government has to put in dollars for them to put in dollars. So it is all sort of this chess game of bringing everyone together.
Right. Mm-hmm. So just so, you know, people aren't generally as politically attuned as you and I in terms of, you know, what sort of grants mean, but you said this is kind of seed money. So can you explain about sort of what the expectation is that you will do with this funding in terms of proceeding with the project?
Well, some of the dollars, for example, we had to hire an architect to go through the location to verify if it was doable and what we could do. We had to hire someone to help us work with the planning department at the City of Guelph to kind of have the conversations around planning, zoning, what would need to happen. So all of those pre kind of development costs are covered by the seed. Explore. We did hire someone to meet with the Parkview owners and ask, what are all the costs of your daily, what's your costs in a month? What do you pay for hydro, utilities, all of those things? And then what would you make per month around rent? Like, is this a feasible option? So all of that took that work, and we paid for someone to help us with that.
Mm-hmm. So it's based, you know, basically you're getting all the ducks in the row so that you can bring this idea forward, whether that's to the federal government, whether that's to the City of Guelph or the County of Wellington. And then you have all the answers at hand, because I think what has gotten a lot of people, let's say, revved up about what's happening is that I think people are feeling like it's a done deal, and that perhaps things are moving in a way that has been outside of getting, of allowing like the neighborhood and the city time to get their feedback together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've just been working through making this happen, but it's not a done deal. We don't have the property. It's not, that's why my pitch was we need help for down payment as a start. Like you have to think about what's the strategy, what's the initial, how do we just get it and then move everything forward? So that was my ask.
Right.
But it's not a done deal. We're still in talks on how we move that forward because we would need that pot of money.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised that, I mean, a lot of this, I don't want to say negativity towards the project, but a lot of like the questioning about it is being driven by the neighborhood who think that the character of their area is going to drastically change. And maybe they don't understand the nature of supportive housing versus emergency shelters, or maybe they have not understood the function that Parkview has served in the fairly long past, 30 years, as you were saying, as an emergency shelter. Were you surprised by that reaction to some of the negativity?
I'm surprised by the negativity just because to me, it's been a location where we've had no staff and we've had maybe between 3 and 20 rooms. So we don't know who's in the other rooms. And so people rent the rooms for the night. Like it's a turning over population at all times. So to me, moving 35 people into a location that's their home with the supports there 24/7, if I were a neighbor, I would think that would be an improvement to the neighborhood. And some of the negativity can be disheartening because it just doesn't feel that kind, but there are a lot of kind people in there as well, and people meeting together and have done the research and are positive about it from that neighborhood as well. So kind of preparing for town hall on Thursday, I'm reaching out to everyone that's reached out to me to clarify misconceptions. I think some of the initial posters were saying it was going to be a homeless shelter, which is not, we're moving away from shelters. That's not what we want this place to be. So that kind of got the information out there on the wrong foot, because some of the neighbors are comparing it to shelters in Kitchener. And so I just have to rectify those misconceptions for sure. And just talk about the positive. It would be more positive for their neighborhood. I'm just certain of it.
Right. Because people presumably moving into a supportive housing situation are going to become permanent fixtures. It's not going to be a sort of a transient population where it's this month it's 30 people and next month it's a different 30 people. These people will become neighborhood residents and people who, you know, will hopefully be as invested in the neighborhood as the people who presently live there.
That's right. Exactly.
I think one of the things that sort of driven this, and I saw it happen with the floating of the idea for turning 106 Beaumont into supportive housing last fall, was that people feel like things are kind of sprung at them in the middle of meetings, and it's not just a matter of you know, shelter and homes. There's a wide variety, and I've seen it time and time again. With various issues at council, people pay attention to the meetings, not necessarily the debates around, you know, that leads to the meetings. And I understand from your point of view too, you were trying to purposely put this on the radar of council, say like, yes, there's this one project that needs money, but there are other projects afoot that are going to need money. Having said all that, I guess I don't want to phrase the question this way, but I can't think of another way to phrase it. But you know, was there kind of a better way to sort of put this on the city's radar that did not immediately sort of send people to their corners about, you know, the traditional erroneous impressions about what what homelessness is and what shelters do and all that stuff. I guess, was there a better way that this could have come up and provoked the conversation that you're looking for?
I mean, I'm clearly politically naive. We've been talking, the mayor has started the mayor's task force on homelessness. Permanent supportive housing has been a goal for the last year from a city point of view. And we have been having these conversations. So I actually had no idea I was supposed to ask the neighbors if they would approve, because it is a human right to be housed. And it's, I don't understand that part. Am I asking a neighborhood if they're agreeable for another resident in their community to have a home? Like, is that what that process would look like? I'm just not sure. It's not done. It was just getting an actual project in the view of city council to say, we're close, winter's coming, and let's get 35 people housed. And for me, the article that came out at one point, there have been good articles, and kind of the one more negative that it was sprung on the community. I guess I didn't understand that you have to get permission for people to get a home in that neighborhood.
Right.
That's my naivety, I guess, or just, what it was doing, and that we've been using it for years where it's not been supported and not had what we are offering with this project. To me, it's just a win-win for that community. So I probably didn't understand that feedback as well.
But you raise a good point, though, because me, if I were to buy a house on Maryland Drive, I would not, you know, go and knock on the doors of my prospective neighbors and say, like, hey, look, I'm looking at buying this house. I'm a 42-year-old single man from Guelph. Would that be okay if I moved into your neighborhood? Like, people would think I was crazy.
It is true. And so that is kind of the fire in me a little bit, and naive. Like, I actually just didn't know how. Yeah, exactly. Is that what is the right path? I always want to take the path with the most integrity if I can, or if I'm aware of it. But I actually didn't even understand that was what people need to do. So that sort of kickback was kind of a surprise to me. And actually, how do you do that, like, logistically?
Well, I think, and this goes to, I think, Rodrigo's love of town halls. I think a lot of that is going to be dispelled coming out of that town hall. At least I think that is my hope, and I think that has been my experience too, that you give people information, and the fear isn't necessarily the fear of what the end result is going to be. The fear is of decisions being made without my input. The fear is not having all the information I need to decide if this is a good idea for my community. And once that piece of it is filled, it becomes a much easier job to actually get down to talking about what to actually do to get the project done.
That's right. And there are, just to clarify, people have been reaching out to me in those neighborhoods that are also really positive about the project and want it to happen. So that's heartening for sure. And talking to the Barry Lucy's Place project, which is very similar to what we're proposing, and they're a year in, the person that started and is running that project is going to attend the town hall, and I'll get him to talk about the neighbors and what happened with that project and how it's actually, how it looks a year later and the positive feedback from the community on that project. So that, I think, will help too.
And maybe another thing I would just add is that I think there's a lot of this othering in Guelph, and it's not necessarily a comment on people's lack of kindness, but I know that there are a lot of people in Guelph who, if, you know, they're living somewhere and three young people who look university aged move in next door, they start sweating because of the negative reputation that a lot of university aged people have about what they do when they move into a house by themselves. So I don't think this is just sort of about people who have a need for homes. It's about just a general feeling about what happens when certain people, certain groups of people move into an area, whether that's people who are people in need of homes or people who are university aged. I think Guelph neighborhoods are sensitive to that.
That's right. I think there are stereotypes that you have to clarify, and we can't fall into. And the othering, I mean, the people I know that will hopefully move to the Parkview, if it could happen, are Guelph citizens. They are part of our community. They went to GCVI and Ross and St. James, and they're not other people. They are our community. And I think that's what people have to remember too. These are our sisters and brothers and nephews, and you know, families are connected to all of these individuals in our community. So I always want to remember for those people too.
Absolutely. What are the next phases for this? You have your seed money, you're gathering the information. Is this a thing where everything goes according to plan, this project could be underway in a year, or is that a really optimistic timeline? I mean, what after the town hall, I guess, what's the next piece of this you're working on?
We have the town hall this Thursday at 7, and then I'm working with city staff to prepare a report that they'll return, I believe, on October 26th to that city council meeting. So we're working on those pieces of how can we work this forward. There are some questions still. We'd need the funding to help us get the down payment. If that could happen, we could start as soon as possible. Have people, we already have a few people in there, then we could kind of start getting people in there and then continue on with the path of renovating and moving things forward.
Is in terms of, like, and maybe this may be a bit further along than you are, but you know, in terms of the funding model, is this going to be government driven, or is there going to be a piece of this that's going to involve like fundraising from the community? Do you have any of those ideas yet?
Yes, we would need, so the drop-in is kind of leveraging some of their assets towards the project, and then we would need this additional cost to get the down payment, but then as we move forward, we would go to the CMHC and look for help with a mortgage and that kind of thing, and definitely a pot of fundraising to help with renovations. We'd look to the city, to the county for different costs in terms of the supports and it will take a lot of different pots of dollars to come together to make it move forward.
And I think a lot of people would want to help out with that endeavor. I think, as we said, there is a lot of kindness in Guelph that would potentially invite having you and the city and whoever else to make this a reality, invite you to tap into that. I guess this is another question of, maybe this is a question to be answered later, but you know, in terms of people who maybe are interested in helping you out now, is there any way that people can you know, help make this project a reality?
Yes, we are planning. I'm working with Dominica from the Poverty Task Force, and she's been tasked the role to help all different projects, like permanent supportive housing projects, move forward. So she's developing with the community kind of a fundraising campaign, but we kind of need a project to start to get it going, or I don't know about the timing of that, but there will definitely be kind of a call out to community, because hopefully this is one of many more projects that move forward, and we will, for all the projects, need the community support. So kind of stay tuned on that for sure.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Maybe to wrap up, to go back to just a general question about the work of the drop-in center and the role of the pandemic and how things are changing. This may be a question you can't answer, but you know, is there a point in time where the drop-in center might be able to reopen? Like, are there precautions you can take to open those doors again? Or are you kind of stuck until there's a vaccine?
Our doors were, because we have so many people in the hotel, like 80 to 90, we need to redeploy all of our staff and supports to support that project. And we've met with, like, I've met with Royal City Mission and Hope House over the summer months to talk about the space, like providing a downtown space for people to come, maybe on a low income and needing help with food. They're offering that from their locations. So in that perspective, that they're kind of picking up that piece for just having a place for people to come and have a meal. And we do have one of our staff people working out of Royal City to help with a move. They're handing out meals twice a day now, so we are helping with that as the drop-in. So we know those community spaces will be opening carefully, but for right now, because we have a lot of efforts with the homelessness part in particular, we're focusing on those efforts right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And your work is never done, and I appreciate that.
No, we'll see. We'll see. We all want to have hope for the future and what we can do. We need to end homelessness. So you have to start somewhere. And we really are hopeful that we can get this project moving forward, because for the people that are homeless, they need hope. But even for all of us that work in this field, you just want to see people be able to be set up in a way and be housed so that they can succeed in life and move forward in a healthier way. So it's really for all of us the kind of passion to get these projects going.
You're here.
Yeah.
Well, Gail Hoekstra, thank you for all you do, and thank you for joining us today and shedding some extra light on the project, and we look forward to seeing it come to fruition, I think. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
And once again, that was Gail Hoekstra. To learn more about the project, you can tune in to the Ward 2 Town Hall on Thursday at 7 p.m., and you can find that link at the show notes page for this episode. As Gail Hoekstra said, a report on this project is likely coming to council at the October 26th meeting, and that agenda will come out on October 15th. And for more information about the efforts to combat poverty in Guelph, come back for next week's episode of the Politicast for a discussion with Dominica McPherson, the coordinator for the Guelph and Wellington Task Force for Poverty Elimination. For now, that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. You can download it from the host at Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you'll get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. You can reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. You can go to Guelph Politico's Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.